What if the very foundations of your reality, your sense of self, your understanding of cause and effect, even your moral judgments were nothing more than elaborate tricks your mind plays on itself? This isn't the premise of a science fiction film. It's the unsettling conclusion of one of philosophy's most revolutionary works, written by a 28-year-old Scottish thinker who would change how we understand human nature forever. David Hume's insights didn't just challenge religious orthodoxy, they dismantled the very architecture of human certainty. Einstein credited Hume's work as instrumental to developing relativity theory, recognizing that our most basic assumptions about reality might be far less solid than they appear. Everything in your mind falls into one of two categories: impressions or ideas. Impressions are the vivid, immediate experiences, the sharp sting of cold water, the rush of falling in love, the taste of chocolate melting on your tongue. Ideas are merely faded copies of these impressions, like watching a movie of your vacation rather than being there. This distinction matters profoundly because it means we literally cannot think about anything we haven't first experienced in some form. Try to imagine a completely new color you've never seen. You can't. Your mind can only remix what it already knows. Even our concept of God is just taking familiar qualities, intelligence, goodness, and cranking them up to maximum. Our thoughts flow through three invisible channels: resemblance, contiguity, and cause and effect. A photograph of your grandmother makes you think of her actual presence. Thinking of your kitchen leads to thoughts of the adjacent dining room. Seeing dark clouds makes you grab an umbrella. These connections feel natural because they are natural. Your mind operates through these principles automatically, like gravity pulling objects downward. Mathematics claims space is infinitely divisible. Keep having a line forever. But Hume reveals the absurdity. If something finite contains infinite parts, each occupying space, you'd need infinite space. Try this. Stare at a dot on paper while backing away. Eventually, it vanishes. That moment before disappearing? An indivisible unit of perception. You can't divide it further because your senses have limits. Since all ideas about space come from sensory experience, how can we claim infinite divisibility when our perceptions aren't? Mathematics works not because it taps into perfect forms, but because it systematizes experience usefully. Now watch billiard balls collide. You see the first moving, contact, then the second rolling away. But did you see force transferring? You witnessed a sequence, not the invisible power connecting them. Hume's devastating insight: we never perceive the necessary connection between causes and effects. After seeing fire followed by heat hundreds of times, your mind develops automatic expectation. This feels like knowledge, but is merely custom operating on imagination. Without experience, could you deduce bread nourishes rather than poisons? Absolutely not. The connection exists in our psychology, not in objects themselves. Custom, not cosmic law, guides human life. Close your eyes and search for yourself, that continuous, unified entity you've assumed exists your entire life. What do you actually find? Specific thoughts, feelings, sensations. Perhaps you're breathing, a surfacing memory, an itch on your arm. But where's the self having these experiences? Hume's answer is chilling. It doesn't exist. You are nothing more than a bundle of perceptions in constant flux. Consider a tree growing from sapling to towering oak. Every molecule gets replaced, yet we call it the same tree because changes happen gradually. Personal identity works the same way. Memory creates apparent continuity. You remember yesterday's experiences and connect them to today's, weaving a narrative of selfhood. But this narrative is precisely that, a story your mind tells itself, not a metaphysical fact. Recognizing identity as a useful fiction rather than ultimate reality changes everything. Hume's radical claim: reason is and ought only to be the slave of the passions. We think we're rational beings who occasionally feel emotion, but Hume flips this. Reason cannot motivate action, only passion can. Your decision to read this wasn't pure logic. Curiosity, self-improvement, or procrastination drove you. Reason merely helps satisfy desires. It cannot create them. Pride, humility, love, and hatred arise through a double relation of impressions and ideas. When you feel proud of your beautiful home, the house connects to you through ownership, while its beauty produces pleasure resembling pride's sensation. The same qualities causing pride when related to yourself cause love when related to others, explaining why we crave approval for qualities we value in ourselves. Even free will is suspect. Human actions show the same uniformity as natural events. Without this predictability, society would collapse. Passions aren't unreasonable themselves, only when based on false beliefs. This emotional foundation explains human behavior far better than rationalist accounts ever could. Justice is an artificial invention, a social technology solving specific problems. Nature burdened humans with countless needs while providing meager means to satisfy them. Society compensates, yet our selfishness and limited generosity obstruct cooperation. We naturally favor ourselves and close relations, making easily transferred possessions constant temptations for theft. Justice emerges not from natural moral sentiment, but from convention, a mutual understanding of common interest. Rules develop gradually. Stability of possession addresses security. Transfer by consent enables distribution. Promise keeping allows cooperation over time. These aren't inscribed in human nature, but discovered through social experience. Government enforces these rules because humans prefer immediate over remote advantages. Magistrates maintain immediate interest in justice's execution while lacking incentive for injustice toward most citizens. Once established, these artificial rules generate genuine moral sentiments. We feel real indignation at injustice even when it doesn't directly affect us. When you witness cruelty, you don't reason your way to condemning it. You feel its wrongness immediately. This reveals morality's true foundation, sentiment, not reason. Examine a willful murder, and you'll find only passions, motives, and actions. The vice escapes you until you turn inward and find disapproval arising in yourself. Sympathy, our ability to receive others' feelings, explains how we care about actions that don't directly affect us, grounding our moral judgments. Utility determines which traits we approve: generosity and humanity for social functioning, prudence and industry for self-interest. We approve justice solely because it promotes public good, which matters to us through sympathy. This doesn't reduce ethics to mere preference. Our moral sentiments show natural uniformity arising from shared human nature. We generally approve benevolence and condemn cruelty not through arbitrary convention, but because these traits naturally affect human sentiment, providing moral judgment's foundation without requiring divine command or abstract reason. Hume's theory explains both ethics' objectivity and subjectivity. Moral judgments feel universal because human nature exhibits remarkable consistency. We're wired to respond sympathetically to others' suffering and approve traits promoting social harmony. Yet morality remains grounded in feeling rather than reason, explaining why moral arguments often fail to convince those who don't share our sentiments. This framework resolves the tension between moral realism and relativism. Our moral responses aren't arbitrary. They emerge from shared human psychology and social needs, but neither are they cosmic truths independent of human experience. They're features of how creatures like us, with our particular emotional capacities and social requirements, naturally respond to the world. After dismantling causation, personal identity, and reason itself, Hume finds liberation rather than despair. Even mathematics revealed our fallibility, yet nature compels us to judge as inevitably as we breathe. Skeptical arguments fail because belief is emotional, a feeling ideas cannot destroy. After hours of philosophical melancholy, Hume finds himself cured by nature through relaxation or conversation. After dining with friends, these speculations appear cold and ridiculous. We cannot escape skeptical doubts through reasoning, as reason generates these doubts. Instead, nature equipped us with instincts and habits that carry us through life despite philosophical uncertainty. Hume's skepticism differs from nihilism. He reframes knowledge as a modest enterprise, acknowledging limitations while continuing to investigate. True skeptics remain diffident of both philosophical doubts and convictions. In a world obsessed with certainty, whether religious, scientific, or ideological, Hume offers something more valuable: the courage to embrace uncertainty without surrendering curiosity. Your beliefs about causation, self, and morality may be elaborate fictions, but they're useful fictions that make human life possible. The question isn't whether you can prove ultimate truth, but whether you can live wisely, knowing such proof may be forever beyond reach.